So if we don't start there, we're going to be in real problem, real trouble. But starting there, it's like everything else becomes easier when we deal with heart issues first. So singing as a team, it's always, you know, everybody's always coming up and asking, so how do you blend with people? How do you get to these issues? God bless you. I like this next quote because it really just kind of summarizes everything in one little package. Consider an excellent football team and you realize several things. First, they study the same plays, stretch and work out together, do pre-game warm-ups together, and are basically on the same page. They also care a great deal about the outcome of the game. It's personal. Put all that together and you have a team. Study, stretch, work out, warm up, care. A perfect formula for singers. And I couldn't agree more. All those things combined together make for a great team who is working together as not just individual vocalists coming to sing on the same team or on the same stage, but you're actually working together as a team, putting egos aside, putting pride aside, and allowing each other's gifts to blend with yours so that you're no longer just an individual singer. So, this is going to be really, really practical, a lot of it. And I want you to feel free to ask questions as we're going along. And I know that a lot of you are on different pages. Some of you are very advanced in this, and some of you are just beginners. So I'm just going to kind of cover everything and kind of go quickly, and hopefully won't leave anybody in the dust. Some of these, if you were part of my class before, you probably heard some of these things. Warm-ups together are really, really important. A vocalist should be warming up before they come together to sing as a group at church, and we talked about that in my last class. You need to be coming warmed up, first of all. But warming up together serves a purpose. It serves that purpose of actually listening together, starting to sing together. It just takes a while to do, and unless you are practicing like on a probably twice a week basis, you don't just come together at one rehearsal and just sing and sound great all the time. Usually new people are coming into a team. My husband and I just went out on a church plant. Our church sent out the church plant. And so we've got whole new issues to deal with. New people and people who don't normally serve in this area of worship and stuff because it's a church plant and we're small and we just need people to serve. So you're going to be put in situations where, you know, not everybody's quite on the same page. So warming up together really does help. Not just, you know, the five-note scale stuff, but things that are pretty simple. Talked about this in the last class. Floaters is a great way to warm up together. Floaters, I just call it floaters. Let me just sing it for you. It's just, you're just singing all about. You're just going... Most of what we sing as singers are vowels. Vowels. And all of us, depending on where we come from, we all sing our vowels very, very differently. We produce them differently. They're placed differently. And it all begins way back in the throat, you know, way down in the neck area, back of the throat area, back here, middle, front. I mean, all the different articulators, everything that God has given you to make sound, it's all different. And your cultural background makes a big difference, too. Somebody that's been raised in California trying to sing with somebody who's been raised in the South and Louisiana, Mississippi, they're going to sing their vowels very, very differently, let alone people from South Africa or Malaysia or Indonesia or, you know, the UK. It's just everybody's all over the place. And so because we produce our vowels differently, and because singing is mostly about vowels, that's what we sustain, that's what we hold, it's really important to sing vowels together, not just your songs. So, let's see, a couple more things. Okay, when you're singing together as a team, don't just sing the baby scales, the pentascales, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Those are, I call them the baby steps. They're just the things you should sing in the first five to, you know, 15, 20 minutes of your vocal warm-up. You need to go beyond those as a vocal team, because then things really start to get nippy. You're going to go to octaves, even octave and a half exercises. In other words, stretch out as a team. Doing octaves is kind of like that stretching, getting your vocal cords flexible so you're ready to do any kind of song. So when you're doing those octaves, just something like that all together, where you're actually stretching and then working on the individual. At first, everybody can't do it, and that's okay. That's okay, because again, when you're on a church team, there are going to be very advanced people that have done it a long time, and there are going to be some really new people who are just there because you need more people, and they haven't done it very often or very long, but they just want to serve, and so they're there. And so you have this huge mix of people that are all on different pages. But if you keep working out together, they're going to start picking it up. And even the advanced people who already know how to do it individually are going to learn to blend their voices with all the other people's. So you need to be listening to each other. Another one, and I always do this with choirs, but it's a great listening exercise. How many sopranos do I have in the group? Okay, altos? Not very many altos. Tenors? Basses? A bass baritone together. How many guys? How many bass baritones? Okay, we're a little slim on the bass baritones. Okay, this is just a great, easy thing to do. Let's see. We're gonna have bass baritones. Just you're gonna sing on bass baritones. Something to check your pitch, it can get a little weird. But the more you do it, the more people start really listening listening to the tune, listening to the full steps up, listening to the half steps up or down. And it trains people's ears to listen to pitch in a fresh new way when you do this. And you just keep holding it out. I know people will start complaining that they're getting dizzy or whatever. Just tell them to go like this. It just means that they're breathing deeply and they're pushing a lot of air, and they've got a little extra air in their blood circulation. So if they just do some isometric exercises, it'll go away really quick. And they won't be dizzy anymore. Okay? But it's a great, great exercise to do as a group. Okay, because you're listening to each other. Yeah.
Okay, I have a question.
Yeah.
In the church that I work at, we have a mother that's been in the choir, that's very dedicated.
Yes.
But she's so dedicated.
Aww.
How do you go about that type of situation?
Yeah.
But she sings louder than everybody else.
Oh, no.
That's the problem. Like, there's nothing wrong with her being
tone deaf.
It's just singing louder than everyone else.
It's
like, whoa.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I did have a woman in one of my choirs that just, she just seemed to belt out every single note. It was, 10 decibels above everybody else, always. I mean, one thing you can do, is put them far away from the microphone. That definitely helps. But you know what? That's why we talked about that humility thing first. That's where, in love, we can go to people. And if this person, really loves to sing and they're committed, unless they're totally tone deaf, and most people are not totally tone deaf, they're just untrained. They've never trained their ears to a piano. And most of the time, even people that have really pretty good pitch problems, with a little bit of work, to matching pitches, can learn, but it just takes a whole lot of patience. Being with them and say, can you sing this pitch? Ah, and many times somebody is struggling, it's going to go, ah, and you're going to have to keep, bring them up, ah, to get them up to the pitch, and then sometimes it'd be over, although most of the time I find them under. But working at pitch matching like that and just being very, very patient and just, encouraging them to breathe really deep, they will get better. They'll actually learn to get better at hearing. I once taught a deaf girl to sing like that. But I would just, give her the sign language, what note we were singing. She would feel the piano. Obviously, it was acoustic piano, not electric. But she could feel it, and then she could feel it here and learn. And we got up to 5-7 notes in her scale, in her range, before she had other things happen in her life and she had to stop. But it was just amazing that even somebody who was deaf could learn to feel it right. And generally, you learn to feel it here rather than using your ears in that situation. But even the sense of feel is real important. Yeah.
It's also helpful for somebody that seemingly, is tone deaf. Mm-hmm. And you start that pitch matching, and you start singing, go immediately find the pitch that they're singing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And work from that pitch.
Oh, yeah, that's very good.
Rather than trying to have them match some other pitch, mm-hmm. go right to their pitch and then say, now go up a little bit, or go
very
down
good.
A little bit, and work from their mental.
Yes, style. That's very good. Another thing along those lines, the pitch matching, is use a pitch wheel. Those little you blow in them, the little pitch wheel things. You blow in them, and they give you that pitch. Well, for somebody who needs to learn the whole thing of tone and pitch matching, if they hum into it, kind of at that pitch, if they get the right pitch, it matches the vibrations going on in the pitch wheel, and they'll be able to hear it, feel it. But if they're off, it's going to be noticeable. So it's something that they can even do on their own once they kind of learn what they're listening for to match pitches at home by themselves. So it's a cool thing, just sing into a pitch wheel. Okay? But then, like I said, we talked about the humility thing, because there have been many times, I've just had to go to people and in a very loving way just tell them that, their voice, it seems to be louder than everybody else's, and they're having trouble, with the songs. And, I try to draw them out. Now, you know, are you not understanding, you know, what your part is? Can I help you learn your part better? Or can I work with you a little extra to help you feel more comfortable? And I want you to relax when you sing. And so I just start coaching them vocally a little bit too. But I think we need to have the freedom with each other in our lives. If we're in the same church, we're walking out our lives together. If we cannot be honest and transparent with each other at church, we're not going to do it with nobody. It's just the way it is. We need to say, honey, you are so gifted in this and this, but this area, it doesn't seem to be the area that God has gifted you in. And at least this is in my opinion right now. You know, I wish there were so many people that have come to me with either singing issues or songwriting issues, because I teach a lot of songwriting. And I wish they had somebody in their lives that would tell them, God is a God who loves to create, and He's created all kinds of things in all of us, gifts that are just unimaginable. And we just need to find those gifts and go in them and not search for somebody else's gifts. And many times you do that. We compare ourselves, but I'd rather have that gift. But that's not the way we're made. And we're not going to be fruitful in those endeavors when we're not going after what God has planned for us, His call on our lives. So anyway, yeah, I think we need to be real with people and love on them. And try to help them where we can, but sometimes we need to direct them in a different area if it's just not working. But we do it in love, and we do it really gently. Sometimes they actually come along and change, and it's so cool to see, you know, and it's awesome. So, or sometimes God will take them in another direction, and they flourish. And you go, oh, thank you, God. That's what they were made for. So. But we need to be real, and we need to be real enough to let people do the same thing to us, you know. So I know what that's like, and we never want to hear it at first, but you're so grateful afterwards because you know it's real, it's right. Oops, wrong one. I gotta put this thing away. Wrong one. All right. When we're sitting down, and your choir director or you know, minister of music, worship leader, whatever, has brought in a song for you to learn. Invariably, this always happens in all the meetings I'm in. You know, they put on the song, and immediately people start trying to sing along with it, even though they have no idea how the song goes, and they're barely enough readers that they can sight read it, but they want to sing it so badly. Okay, it's a number one no-no. Just tell everybody, put their music down, be quiet. Listen to the song only. Don't try to sing it. Don't try to play it. No piddling on the guitars or on the drums or anywhere else. No humming. Just listen. Because if you do not listen well, you're not going to learn well. Unfortunately, I love being a vocalist because vocalists, you know, we got the best job. We've got the words. We've got the words. We've got the truth. No other musician has that. So I love being a vocalist. But unfortunately, vocalists are usually the most poorly trained of all the musicians in churches. They don't have the theory background. They don't understand sight singing, ear training issues, and they have a hard. Some of them have a real hard time learning music. And so this is just one of those key areas. Okay, everybody needs to be quiet when you're listening to a new song. When a new song is introduced, everybody should always come with a pencil in hand to every rehearsal so that they can mark their music and know what's going on. But then, it's like, as a group, how many, like, worship leaders, ministers of music, how many people here are, like, in charge of the music for the church? A lot of you. Okay, great. It's like, when you introduce a new song to the church, or to, you know, to your musicians, to teach to the church, it's just so important that they, as a group, understand why you picked this song. It's really important for them to know, what is the meaning and concept of this song? All right? What are the particular things of, whether it's a theological point that you want to bring home, or there were certain phrases that just struck you, and you thought, this is what I want to sing to the Lord, and so I want my church to sing it. There's got to be It's like if we're all on the same page, understanding the lyric of the song, I'm talking about the truth here. If we all understand these things, it's like we're all going to be learning the song better and quicker because we understand the truth behind what we're singing and what's important as we're singing this song. But then also, we need to understand from our leaders what is the musical style? This is the other end, beyond the lyrics. What is the musical style of this song? Who do you want to sound like? Sometimes, you know, there are certain vocal sounds or groups or whatever that you want to sound like on this song. There's a certain feeling that you want to get across when you play this song or when you sing this song as a group. All those things should be understood by everyone before anybody even utters a word or plays a note. If all that stuff is not understood, you're just kind of leaving people out in the dark. And they can get the music down, but they're not really getting the song down. And it's not really becoming a part of them. I have just found that's real helpful before anything is played or sung. And then, going on, and again, vocalists, you need to turn off the singing stuff until you listen to that melody very, very well. So everybody needs to be on the same melody. Altos, tenors, basses, no parts until everybody has the melody down perfectly. Because that's what the congregation needs to sing more than anything. All right? That is because most of our congregations are musically illiterate. We do not have the musical culture like we had 50, 100 years ago. Most people cannot read music, and they're coming into our services, and they're trying to follow somebody. So the melody has to be very pronounced and very strong. So everybody should know the melody well. And same thing about rhythms. Generally, you just have to develop what we call big ears. It's a weird visual term, but you need to develop big ears to listen to all the people around you, to flow with those around you, to know if you're sticking out or if you're not. And, you know, if you don't know if you're sticking out, you need to ask somebody. Say, am I singing too loud? Am I singing over everybody else? Again, humility. Just put away the pride. You know, allow people to say, oh, no, you're fine. Or, yeah, you know, on this part, you do seem to be a little too loud. You think maybe you can bring that back? And, you know, generally, if you humble yourself, people are very gracious because they know what it's like, you know, to be humbled themselves. We all do. You know, we've all had our experiences. But when we come to people in love with an attitude of wanting to serve them and help them, or when we're in love wanting to humble ourselves and be a servant, people will generally be very gracious with us. So, but also we need to learn how to use our eyes. One great thing that I always try to do when we're singing together, it doesn't matter how large the choir, it's getting everybody together in a circle and singing to each other. So, tell you what, can I ask some volunteers? okay, are you alto or soprano?
Alto,
come on up. Can I have a soprano? Come on up. All right, and a tenor? Yeah, come on up. And a bass, baritone, whatever. I'm not even going to have you sing parts. I just want the different tones and timbres. Thank you. Okay, I want all of you over here. I want you to put your backs to each other and kind of stand in a circle with your backs to each other. So you come on over here. Okay, stand right there. Just put your back there. Stand up. Yeah, there you go. Okay. All right, let's just sing Amazing Grace. Okay? If you know the parts, great. If not, doesn't matter. Let's sing. No, I'm going to sing the part. Everybody's going to listen, okay? But this is a good thing. I have no idea what your voices are like or anything. All right? But just sing for me.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
Mouths were definitely wider open. Their vowels were definitely more matching. Guys were still a little loud. The women could come out, especially soprano could come out. But still, it was so much better facing each other. So the eyes do play a big part in our blend. I am always telling choir, worship team, everything. This is not just about using the ears. You definitely want to use this, but you want to use your eyes, and you want to watch very, very carefully. There's an exercise. I love acting and doing drama and stuff. And we've got a couple of very good professional musicians at the church that I come from. Professional actors. And so they've been in the field for many years. And they did this cool thing where everybody would be in a circle and one person would come out and be the leader. And they'd have to do some weird movement. You know, it could be, you know, something like this. And the person that they were standing in front of had to totally mirror what they were doing. Okay? And it was an exercise, you know, in watching, mirroring, and expressing exactly what that person was doing, the leader. And they would go around until every person in the group was exactly doing the same thing. All right? I was thinking, you know, that's a great kind of exercise for vocalists, too. Because it brings everything down to the point where, you know, we have to be so tuned into each other, watching, hearing, and saying, I'm going to sing exactly like you. And I've experienced this and experimented with it. Usually it works better in a small group, like what we just did, the four. But I think you could do six or maybe eight. But in a small group, have somebody be the leader and just start singing. A vowel on any note, and maybe even change the vowel tone, experimenting with breathy resonance or real full resonance or doing wacky slides, whatever, but just going to one person and having them mimic what the leader's doing, and then going to the next person, until the whole group is doing that exact same thing, but very, very, being very, very specific with our ears and with our eyes, doubling what other people are doing. See, it's not just about me as a vocalist when we're talking about a team. Okay, a team is greater than the sum of its parts, and that's what happens when we sing together. Something happens. We all stop being those individual singers and turn into this group that has a sound much bigger than any one of the sum of all of us are together. It's greater. There's a greater capacity there. So anyway, when I said everybody comes with a pencil to rehearsal, pencil pens, I mean, everybody, it doesn't matter what you're learning musically, should be marking those entrances and cutoffs, breaths, slides and inflections, the little tiny things, so that every time when you sing, if everybody has marked, like, when I serve they, if everybody's got a slide on they, I would mark my music to make sure that everybody, and every single time, we're all going, they, the wondrous cross on which the Prince of, and, you know, you can mark your, glory died. You know, you can mark your vibratos, straight tones, your swells, all your dynamics going up and down. You'll make a mess of your music. But if you practice well, and you practice the same way every time, and everybody keeps a notebook of that music with them at every rehearsal, every time you come together, you're going to have that vocal arrangement that you had talked about. Where we're singing straight tone, where we're adding vibrato, where we're doing slides and inflections, where we're getting softer, where we're singing breathy, where we're singing resonant. All of it should be marked on your music. And there'll be no question as to what to do the next time you're together. I don't know about your church culture, but we're a very busy church culture. Tons of stuff always going on. Not only just the regular, you know, church meetings on Sundays, but we have care groups in the middle of the week, and then of course there's the youth ministry in college, and I mean it just goes on and on, as well as school stuff. I was a homeschool mom for many, 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 many years, and then we had all those meetings and the homeschool stuff going on. People don't have a ton of time to practice. We've gone through seasons where our worship team could only practice once a month, apart from Sunday mornings. You know, it just because it was just so busy. And everybody's in different seasons of life, and you got to find out what you can do. More practice is obviously going to be better, more beneficial to growth as a team, but sometimes you can't. So doing this thing of marking everything down, every nuance, will cut your practice times, and you'll actually sing better as a team. So it is a way of serving. Again, because vocalists tend to be the most poorly trained, rhythms can be a real difficulty with a lot of vocalists. And so when we have a difficult song to teach rhythmically, usually after we've listened to it several times and we get somewhat getting the melody down close, we put the music down in front of us and we use the clap method. We actually clap at every rhythm of the song together as a group. I don't even think I have a difficult rhythm song here. Okay, my husband and I had written a hymn, but for some reason, some people, you know, when they heard it, they couldn't get it. As far as some of the rhythms, you know what I mean? And usually with hymns, you don't have problems. It's more that the faster up songs, you know, that can have the difficult stuff. But if everybody puts down the music, everybody just claps it, and no singing, you just say the words. So, I should do a song that you've all done before. Or, let's see, Christ Alone. Like, in Christ alone, my hope is found. He is my light, my strength, my song. And everybody has to say it like that and clap it out. Well, you very soon find out who doesn't have it and who does. So that it sticks out really close. But then you know which measures are the difficult measures. You can go back and do it again together. Say, no, this is the way it goes. Da, 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 or whatever. But bringing it out in the clap method immediately focuses rhythms alone, apart from the melody. And somehow separating those two can help those people that are having trouble with all those rhythm things. You will invariably always have a person that doesn't have the rhythm stuff down, they just can't seem to get those rhythms down a song, or people that can't even remember their songs and, you know, forget the melodies or forget the words, as well as the vocal enforcer types like myself, who's always up there, no, it's this way, da, da, da. So, anyway, so the clap method is very, very helpful. Beyond that, you know, I really would recommend, and you don't have to get great equipment, but recording your rehearsals is so helpful. It's painful, but it's helpful. Again, it works on that humility stuff. You know, it really shows us for what we are. But it's a good thing. You don't have to get a huge recording studio stuff to record yourself. You're not going to get great quality off a lot of equipment, but you will be able to tell improvement from recording yourself time to time on the same equipment. You see what I'm saying? And not just audio, video as well. That can be so, so helpful. I remember, oh man, it was so painful. I was a vocal performance major in college, and they made us, you know, stand there and sing and have the video doing us the whole time, and then we had to sit there with all our peers and watch ourselves on video. Man, it was just like, you just felt like that tall at the end. It was bad. But it was really good for our hearts. But it really shows you what you look like. Sometimes, if people aren't used to it, they're going, do I really look that way? I didn't know I just stood there. I thought I moved a lot more. I thought I looked more into it. I really look dead, don't I? Yeah. And it's just very eye-opening. But also, even on the video equipment, you can hear a lot of the audio stuff. Again, it's not great quality tonally. But again, it can tell you when you have improvement the next time. Or the next time, because you compare and you go, wow, this sounds a whole lot better. You see how all our cutoffs were together that time? You know, you can really dig in and analyze and strategize how to get better when you record yourself. So, and it's not, I'm not talking about, you know, taking hours and hours to re-record and do. I'm just talking about at the end of your rehearsal, learning a song, and the last time you sing it, just record it. Okay, nothing special. It's just a matter of, you know, using the resources that are available and at hand to you, and just trying to say, okay, how can we make this better? Because what we do when we're singing those songs, if we're up there singing, when I survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my riches keep. Nobody's gonna listen to that. I mean, I'm singing, I'm relatively in pitch, but it doesn't communicate anything. When we sing with more understanding of the words, everything that we're singing, when we sing with greater understanding, heart and mind, of what we're singing, and apply those truths, and are so in tune with one another singing that we don't have to be distracted by the musical stuff, then we can actually mark on our music things like, what are the most important phrases of this lyric here? When I sing, when I survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my richest gain I count but loss, and pour content on all my pride. It's like, that last line gets me. And it's like, the lines that get you, or that get you, the worship leader, whoever it is, whoever's making these decisions, you want to make those stick out. You want to make those lines stand out, because it's using vocal techniques, you can make those truths pop off the page, so to speak, and make everybody pay attention. You can take their breath away with that, because they'll listen to these truths and sing them in a fresh new way. And as if they had never sung these words before. You know how it is when you're sitting, having your quiet times, and you're reading God's Word. And all of a sudden, you're reading a scripture you've read 1,000 times before. But this time, it's almost as if God was behind you speaking it. And you go, oh, I've never seen that before. It's an amazing experience. Well, we can help God's people in our church, in our local body, the people that God has called us to be with and serve. Using our gifts, we can highlight truth rather than just sing them. So if I was having all of you in my worship team vocalist group, and I'm trying to think, okay, how can we make the truths stick out in this song? I might have everybody start off the very first line with a very breathy tone, not a whole lot of resonance, because it's almost like I get a picture when I look at this lyric first. I get a picture of somebody kneeling by their bed and being very quiet. It's a very quiet, thoughtful, peaceful song. That's very somber. So everybody would start singing, "When I survey the wondrous cross." It's very small and intimate. And when you, as a team, do that, it's like, think about when somebody whispers, what does it make you want to do? It makes you want to lean in and listen more. So that's what we can do with these vocal techniques. It makes people listen. It perks up their ears, so it's not just going in one ear out the other. Because we're making things different. We're highlighting truth in a fresh way. On which the Prince of Glory died. I might do a little more dynamic range there and bring it up a little more resonant. My riches gain I count, but loss. And then make it small again. And for that's really different from when I survey the wondrous cross, isn't it? It's very different. But that, I mean, that's, it's an amazing power that vocals and vocalists can bring to a song. That highlighting truth, that depth of theology that we can bring out just by singing it a different way. It's amazing. So I just encourage you to be creative. Get in your churches and be creative. And use, I mean, I haven't even listed all the different kind of stuff you can do. The whole thing with slides and inflections and dynamics. You know, all the volume swells and changes and the whole tone differences, the resonant, the breathy, the bright, the covered tones, the dark tones. All of it can play into what we're doing as a team. But again, it's not about the technique. It's using that technique as a tool to apply and highlight the precious words that we're singing. It's an awesome thing. So, vocal arranging. Everybody's usually got some kind of vocal enforcer on the team. Sometimes it is not the worship leader or director. Sometimes, you know, they're called to that position, but they're not necessarily gifted in this area. And that's when, you know, that leader needs to pinpoint that vocal person who's going to take charge of these areas, you know, to help the rest of the vocal team know how to do this. And you know what? It's a great way to serve. I mean, that's always been my capacity. My husband is the worship leader, and I'm the vocal enforcer. But this frees him up. It frees him up to think about not only leading the band, but also to think about, okay, his exhortation and what is God saying, and thinking about where the Spirit is moving in the service. If he doesn't have to think about those things, man, it frees him up, and it's so good. And so that's where I come in. That's how I can serve. I am serving him, I am serving the team, and I am serving the church that way. So vocalists, even if you are not in that leadership position, you can step up and say, could I serve you this way? Could I help you with this? You know, I'd really like to do that. And I'm not saying that every leader will respond this way, but there are so many leaders out there who just say, yes, thank you for taking that off my plate, because I have too much to think about. So vocal enforcers aware. You're aware. Just remember, variety is real important. Again, it's amazing our ability as human beings to get bored with things so quickly. What we do, we get very bored with things, and once we get bored, we stop listening, don't we? We stop getting impacted. Whether it be with a monotone voice that never changes pitch and they just keep going on and on and on and you know, and so after a while you're just somewhere else. But you know what? There's many times I listen to singers and groups and their songs sound monotone because they never change. The pitches are going up and down, but The volume never changes. The tone never changes. There's no slides, inflections. There's no nothing to make me pay attention and be aware. And so my mind is starting to wander other places, I'm sure, like everybody else.
I have a quick question about that.
Yes.
Is that really for specials that all of those things happen?
No, this is congregation too. Yes, absolutely. And I've seen this work, and it does work. Yes, yes, absolutely. It's a lot of work, though, too. When you're talking about all your congregational songs, congregational worship being sung this way. That's why having a notebook, having consistent music that is marked from your rehearsals, all that kind of stuff, practicing consistently that way, all that applies. Yes, for specials, but yes, for congregational worship. Because you know what happens? Even in the midst of congregational worship, when we're singing this way, and again, you have to be practiced enough that it's not a distraction to you, because I know there's a lot to think about in these issues. But just like any singer knows, the more you practice, the more you're comfortable with your voice, the more fluid and effective your voice is, the less you have to think about it. And you can think about other things. You're free. There's a freedom in that. So that's where, you know, marking our music and practicing stuff like that does free us up. And we can still worship. But highlighting those truths that way, I've seen congregations just take off. You know, when those truths are highlighted, I've seen congregations just explode with applause and clapping for God because the truth was so hit them as they were singing, they couldn't contain themselves emotionally. Or people just starting to weep just because it's real. There's a reality. They're not just singing. They're applying the truth. And it's real and it's changing their heart. You know, it definitely is for congregation. Okay, well, I think I already talked about this, but I was a homeschool mom for many, many years. I just finished my last year. Both my girls are in college now. And so, which I'm really sad because I loved homeschooling. Even though it was the hardest thing I've ever done, I loved it. But I learned this one little exercise. It was a very interesting exercise, but it's like it totally relates to what I'm talking about. It was called the storyline. Maybe some of you have talked about this. This is for when my girls were younger. But the exercise is they have this big, long piece of paper. And they start with a pencil, and they put the pencil down on the paper, and they're not allowed to lift the pencil the whole time that the story is being told. But they are to tell, the story with their pencil. So I read the story, and the girls would have to react with a line to the story. And when the story got really tense, you know, it could be like this. And when the highlights or the climax, you know, the line would go way up. Or if they were really sad, the line would go really low. But they would have to keep the pencil on the paper and keep going, telling the story with the line. Now, when we sing in worship, and especially congregational worship many times, I've been in so many services where the storyline is like this. There's nothing. There's no emotion. There's no anything. And it's like, why is that? Now, you know, other than just people just kind of being dead in their faith, oh, God forbid, many times they're just not using some of these creative techniques that are available to us as musicians to bring, not only highlighting the truth, but bring emotion. These things do bring emotion and life to our songs, the songs that we sing. When we're talking about the slides, inflections, the breathy to resonant, whatever we're going to be using, there's so many options that are available, but using them properly in a way that highlights the special words and phrases that we want to come out. The important words of a song. Let's see. There are just some songs. Okay. This song. Again, this is the song my husband and I, we wrote the music to, because it was written back in the 1800s. But I love this verse. How can a soul condemned to die escape the just decree? At this line. A vile, unworthy wretch am I. like Jesus died for me. So when I sing that, I wanna, you know, make use of all the tools I can in my tool belt vocally to highlight a violence. Unworthy wretch am I. How many people are coming into our congregations that are feeling vile? They feel the weight of their sin. And if they could just hear a song like this, sung with emotion, a vile and worthy wretch am I, but Jesus died for me. You know, it just, it grabs people's hearts when things are put in a way that speaks to their emotions. We are emotional creatures, men and women. Okay? It goes across the board. And you know those emotions were given to us by God. They were. Those emotions were given to us by Him to glorify Him. Let our emotions glorify Him by, again, using these tools to make our songs live. Let our songs have emotions. They do. They already do. There's so many wonderful songs out there. Hymns, new songs, everything, all over the place. Let's let them live. Yeah.
I have one question.
Yeah.
I myself work at a very traditional CRC church. Mm-hmm. And they're basically just that monotone. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have with going about that? Because I work with a choir that's not accepting, they accept my gifts, but they're not accepting me because I'm a young African American, but it, as you look.
Yeah.
What advice do you have? Because right now, I said I wouldn't get too often in contemporary worship. I'll try to stick with the traditional songs and kind of do the crescendos, the big crescendos from there, a little vibrato here and there, and different things like that. But some stuff they just like, no, we're not.
Well, I mean, it depends on your church culture. Obviously, all change in a church must come from the leaders, from the pastors on down. True change, that's the only way it happens. It comes from the top down to the bottom, where the congregation is. So, I mean, oh, you're not the pastor, are you?
No.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, that's where I would go first. You know, I would go, you know, if you're really feeling a passion that God's calling you to do, you know, some of the changes, some significant changes, go to the pastor and just say, this is what I'm feeling. What do you think? Can help me work through this? Can we bring some new life here? This is my heart. You know, and if you bring it that way, just, you know, in an attitude of just wanting to serve the church, wanting them to get it and get fresh life into the worship, I can imagine a leader not at least being willing to try some of these.
And that's actually his vision for the house.
Well, then I would ask him to come and speak to the choir.
Okay, all right.
That's where I'm starting.
Okay.
Okay.
He tries to incorporate it in his message, but I don't think he'd be able to do that.
Yeah, I would have him come. He's the one with biblical authority.
Yeah.
When you're talking about a pastor, he's got biblical authority. Let him come in. Let him speak and say, you know, what's your name?
Emmanuel.
What was that?
Emmanuel. Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, he'll just say, come on, Emmanuel's got lots of wonderful ideas. I want you to listen to what he has to say. And I want you to learn from him. And it will make a difference. It will make a huge difference. Yeah. I appreciate your heart. Thank you for doing what you're doing. Bless you. Bless you. That's awesome. I know we're almost out of time here. Okay, I already did that. So anyway, give your song room to grow, all that kind of stuff with that storyline. Never do the monotone thing. Always let your songs have emotion. Last point, just brush up on your skills. If it's been a while since you've taken theory, ear training, sight singing, all of those things, it's amazing just how much you can forget, you know, if it's been many years. But even if you've never taken it, you know what? It's not that hard if you just take it piece by piece. There's lots of great things online as well as in bookstores. You can learn, and any bit you learn will benefit you in serving the church. It will. If you want to serve musically, equip yourself. Be a good steward. Get out there and just start and ask for grace, and God will give it to you. This is about serving God's people and making God's people come alive with worship. And so it's worth all the time we put into it, isn't it? It is. It's worth everything. So thank you, everybody, for being here.